Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, Minister of the 12th Hour Posh College Cemetery and Congregation of Mount Zion at the 12th Hour in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is November 14, 2016, or it is History 15, 2020. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, I'll Go Where You Want Me to Go. It may not be on the mountain's height, nor over the stormy sea. It may not be at the battle's front, my y'all have need of me. But if by still a small voice he calls to paths that I do not know, I'll answer, dear y'all, with my hand and fly. I'll go where you want me to go. I'll go where you want me to go, dear y'all, or mountain or plain or sea. I'll say what you want me to say, dear y'all. I'll be what you want me to be. Perhaps today their loving words which Joshua would have me speak. There may be now in the paths of sin some wanderer whom I should see. Oh, Savior, if thou wilt be my guide, though rugged and dark the way, my voice shall echo thy mercy sweet. I'll say what you want me to say. I'll go where you want me to go, dear y'all, over mountain or plain or sea. I'll say what you want me to say, dear y'all. I'll be what you want me to be. There's surely somewhere a lonely place in earth's hottest field so wide, where I may labor through life's short day, for Yahshua crucified. So trust in my all through the tender care, and know that thou lovest me. I'll do what I will with the heart sincere. I'll be what you want me to be. I'll go where you want me to go, dear y'all, or a mountain, or plain, or sea. I'll say what you want me to say, dear y'all. I'll be what you want me to be. Cyrus the Great introduces the final warning. Okay, the final warning starts in our time for Judah, the lawgiver, house of David, father of Judah. All right, we're looking at, for our opening reading, it's going to be taken from 2 Chronicles chapter 36. Let's just read the whole chapter. It says that, verse 1, then the people of the land took Jehoaz, the son of Josiah, and made him king in his father's stead in Jerusalem. Jehoahaz was 23 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 3 months in Jerusalem. And the king of Egypt put him down at Jerusalem and condemned the land and 100 talents of silver and a talent of gold. And the king of Egypt made Eliakim, his brother, king over Judah and Jerusalem, and turned his name to Jehoiakim. And Necho took Jehoahaz, his brother, and carried him to Egypt. Jehoiakim was 25 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem. And he did that which was evil in the sight of Yahweh his Elohim. Against him came up Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and bound him in fetters to carry him to Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar also carried the vessels of the house of the Yahweh to Babylon and put them in his temple at Babylon. Now the rest of the acts of Jehoiakim and his abominations which he did, and that which was found in him, behold, they are written in the book of the kings of Israel and Judah. And Jehoiachin his son reigned in his stead. Jehoiachin was 8 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 3 months and 10 days in Jerusalem, and he did that which was evil in the sight of Yahweh. And when the year was expired, King Nebuchadnezzar sent and brought him to Babylon with the goodly vessels of the house of Yahweh, and made Zedekiah his brother king over Judah and Jerusalem. Zedekiah was 120 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem. And he did that which was evil in the sight of Yahweh's Elohim, and humbled not himself before Jeremiah the prophet, speaking from the mouth of Yahweh. And he also rebelled against King Nebuchadnezzar, who had made him swear by Yahweh. But he stiffened his neck and hardened his heart from turning unto Yahweh Elohim of Israel. Moreover, all the chief of the priests and the people transgressed very much after all the abominations of the heathen and polluted the house of the Yahweh, which he had hallowed in Jerusalem. And the Yahweh Elohim of their father sent unto them by his messengers, rising up betimes and sending, because he had compassion on his people and on his dwelling place. But they mocked the messenger of Yahweh, and despised his words, and misused his prophets, until the wrath of Yahweh arose against his people, till there was no remedy. Therefore he brought upon them the king of the Chaldeans, who slew their young men with the sword, in the house of their sanctuary, and had no compassion upon young man or maiden, old man or him that stooped for age. He gave them all into his hand, and all the vessels of the house of Yahweh, great and small, and the treasures of the house of Yahweh, and the treasures of the king and of his princes. All these he brought to Babylon, and they burnt the house of Yahweh, and break down the wall of Jerusalem, and burnt all the palaces thereof with fire, and destroyed all the goodly vessels thereof. And them that had escaped from the sword carried he away to Babylon, where they were servants unto him and his sons until the reign of the king of Persia. To fulfill the word of Yahweh by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had enjoyed her Sabbath, for as long as she lay desolate, she kept Sabbath, to fulfill 70 years. 2 Chronicles 36:22. Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of Yahweh spoken by the mouth of Jeremiah might be accomplished, Yahweh stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom, and put it also in writing, saying, "Thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, all the kingdoms of the earth hath Yahweh Elohim of heaven given me, and he has charged me to build him an house in Jerusalem." Now this prophecy has come to fulfillment now, and it has been initiated to go into operation with Donald Trump taking the presidency. This prophecy will go into operation come January the 20th, 2017, when Donald Trump is officially sworn in as President of the United States, which is in Judah. Who is there among you of all his people? Yahweh has let him be with him and let him go up. Okay, that ends 2 Chronicles chapter 36. Now we're working on this prophecy now. It is in vogue now. And let's go see what is our next reading pertaining to Cyrus. In 2 Chronicles 36:23, as we continue on, this says, Cyrus, king of Persia, all the kingdoms of the earth hath Yahweh Elohim of heaven given me, and he has charged me to build him a house in Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Who is there among you of all his people, that Yahweh has Elohim be with him and let him go up? So all those that Yahweh put his spirit in and stirred up, those are the ones that went back to rebuild Jerusalem and the temple. Now we go to Ezra chapter 1, and it talks about Cyrus, starting with verse 1. Now, in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of Yahweh by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled, Yahweh stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom, and put it also in writing, saying, Thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, Yahweh Elohim of heaven hath given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he has charged me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Who is there among you of all his people, his Elohim be with him, and let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and build the house of Yahweh Elohim of Israel? He is the Elohim, which is in Jerusalem. Now we'll go to Ezra 1:7. Also Cyrus the king brought forth the vessels of the house of Yahweh, which Nebuchadnezzar had brought forth out of Jerusalem, and had put them in the house of his gods. Verse 8. Ezra 1. Even those did Cyrus king of Persia bring forth by the hand of Mithridat, the treasurer, and numbered them under Shethbazar, the prince of Judah. Okay, now we go to Ezra chapter 3, verse 7. They gave money also unto the masons, and to the carpenters, and meat, and drink, and all, and oil unto them of Zidon, and unto them of Tyre, to bring cedar trees from Lebanon to the sea of Joppa, according to the grant that they had of Cyrus, king of Persia. Ezra 4:3. But Zerubbabel and Jeshua and the rest of the chief of the fathers of Israel said unto them, You have nothing to do with us to build an house unto our Elohim, but we ourselves together will build unto the Yahweh Elohim of Israel, as King Cyrus, the king of Persia, has commanded us. Verse 5, Ezra 4. And hard counselors against them to frustrate their purpose all the days of Cyrus, king of Persia, even until the reign of Darius, king of Persia. Ezra 5:13. But in the first year of Cyrus, the king of Babylon, the same year Cyrus made a decree to build this house of Yahweh. Now, this decree went into operation in 457 B.C., and that was a marking point for the beginning of the 2300-day prophecies as well. Keep that in mind. Ezra 5:14. And the vessels also of gold and silver of the house of Yahweh, which Nebuchadnezzar took out of the temple that was in Jerusalem, and brought them into the temple of Babylon, those did Cyrus the king take out of the temple of Babylon, and they were delivered unto one whose name was Shethbazar, whom he had made governor. Ezra 5:17. Now therefore, if it seem good to the king, let there be search made in the king's treasure house, which is there at Babylon, whether it be so, that a decree was made as Cyrus the king to build this house of Yahweh at Jerusalem. Let the king send his pleasure to us concerning this matter. In the first year of Cyrus the king, the same Cyrus the king made a decree concerning the house of Yahweh at Jerusalem. Let the house be built. This is in Ezra 6:3. The place where they offered sacrifice, and let the foundation thereof be strongly laid, the height thereof 70 cubits, and the breadth thereof 70 cubits. Ezra 6:14, and the elders of the Jews built him, and they prospered through the prophesying of Haggai the prophet and Zechariah, the son of Iddo, and they built it and finished it according unto the commandment of Yahweh of Israel, and according to the commandment of Cyrus and Darius and Artaxerxes, king of Persia. Okay, let's fast forward now to Isaiah 44, verse 28. That said of Cyrus, he is my shepherd, and shall perform all my pleasure, even saying to Jerusalem, thou shalt be built, and to the temple, thy foundation shall be laid. Isaiah 45:1. This saith Yahweh unto his anointed, unto Cyrus, whose right hand I have holder, to subdue nations before him, and I will loose the loins of kings to open before him the two leaved gates, and the gates shall not be shut. Okay. Daniel 1:21. And Daniel continued even unto the first year of King Cyrus. So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a thing was revealed unto Daniel. This is, I just read to you Daniel 6:28 and now Daniel 10:1. Whose name was called Belshazzar, and the thing was true, but the time appointed was known, and he understood the thing, and had understanding of the vision. Okay, now that's the last we hear about Cyrus in the Bible. Now you can read about the fulfillment of these prophecies, for instance, in Matthew. Let's go to track number 4 now, entitled Latest News from Mother by the Vicky Holler. We're on page, 19. And it's, we're going to do a little bit of reading about some prophecy here now. Let's start with page 15 of the Old Testament period. It says that on the latest edition of the Track 4, it says, some years after the tribes crossed the river Jordan and settled in the Promised Land, their kingdom began to decline from its high spiritual estate. Finally, in the reign of Solomon, the Yahweh said unto Jeroboam, I will rend the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon and give 10 tribes to thee, because that they have forsaken me. That's in 1 Kings 11:31-33. This verdict was not executed until after the death of Solomon, when the 10 tribes, upon revolting against Rehoboam, called Jeroboam and made him king over all Israel, 1 Kings 12:20. But all the house of Judah with the tribe of Benjamin, verse 21, remained Rehoboam, son of Solomon. So it was that the kingdom was divided, the 10 tribes, the kingdom of Israel, taking the northern portion of the Promised Land, and the 2 tribes, the kingdom of Judah, retaining the southern portion. But the decree, I will break the bow of Israel, the princes of the 10 tribes' kingdom, and the valley of Jezreel. Hosea 1:5. was not fulfilled until later when Jehu slew all that remained of the house of Ahab in the valley of Jezreel, and all his great men and his kinfolks and his priests, until he left him none remaining. 2 Kings 10:11. Thus Jehu destroyed Baal out of Israel, but took no heed to walk in the law of Yahweh Elohim of Israel with all his heart. See, Jehu was a Baal worshiper, an idolatry worshiper. But he just turned out the decree that Yahweh had given him to do. He was anointed by Elijah to carry out the decree, because he was a warrior, and Yahweh knew he would get it done to destroy all the house of to destroy Baal out of Israel. And in those days, the Yahweh began to cut Israel short, and Hazael smote them and all the coast of Israel. Hazael was a king of the Assyrians, until the Yahweh removed Israel out of his sight, as he had said by all his servants the prophets. So was Israel carried away unto Assyria, and in the cities of the Medes. 2 Kings 10:28-31-32, and chapter 17, verse 23, and chapter 18, verse 11. Herewith came to pass the forewarning. I will cause to cease the kingdom of the house of Israel. Hosea 1:4. Okay, so not many years after the dispersion of the ten tribes did Sennacherib, king of Assyria, come up against all the fenced cities of Judah and took them. And the king of Assyria sent Tartan and Rabsaris and Rabshakeh with a great host against Jerusalem. 2 Kings 18:13-17. Okay, it says, and it came to pass, when King Hezekiah heard it, that he rent his clothes and covered himself with sackcloth and went into the house of Yahweh and prayed before the Yahweh and said, O Yahweh, Elohim of Israel, which dwelleth between the cherubim, thou art the Elohim, even thou alone, of all the kingdoms of the earth. Thou hast made heaven and earth. Now therefore, O Yahweh, O Elohim, I beseech thee, save thou us out of his hand, that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that thou art the Yahweh Elohim, even thou only. Then Isaiah the son of Amos sent to Hezekiah, saying, Thus saith Yahweh Elohim of Israel, that which thou hast prayed to me against Sennacherib, king of Assyria, I have heard. And it came to pass that night that the angel Yahweh went out and smote in the camp of the Assyrians 185,000. And when they arose early in the morning, behold, they were all dead corpses. 2 Kings 19:1-15, 19:20-35. By this divine interposition, Yahweh fulfilled his promise, that I will have mercy upon the house of Judah, and will save them by the Yahweh their Elohim, and will not save them by bow, nor by sword, nor by battle, by horses, nor by horsemen. Hosea 1:7. Notwithstanding this great mercy, Judah continued to sin exceedingly against them, and the Yahweh Elohim of their father sent to them by his messengers, rising up betimes and sinning, because he had compassion on his people and on his dwelling place. But they mocked the messengers of Yahweh and despised his words and misused his prophets, until the wrath of the Yahweh rose against his people till there was no remedy. Therefore he brought upon them the king of the Chaldeans, who slew their young men with the sword in the house of their sanctuary, and had no compassion upon the young man or maiden, old man, or him that stooped for age, he gave them all into his hand. And all the vessels of the house of Yahweh, great and small, and the treasures of the house of Yahweh, and the treasures of the king and of his princes. All these he brought to Babylon, and they burnt the house of Yahweh, and brake down the wall of Jerusalem, and burnt all the palaces thereof with fire, and destroyed all the goodly vessels thereof. And them that had escaped from the sword carried he away to Babylon. Wherefore they were servants to him and his sons until the reign of the kingdom of Persia. 2 Chronicles 36:15-20. After the appointed time of the captivity, Yahweh remembered his promise of mercy to them and stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom, and put it also in writing, saying, Thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, All the kingdoms of the earth hath the Yahweh Elohim of heaven given me, and he has charged me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. And this house was finished on the third day of the month, Adar, which was in the sixth year of the reign of Darius the king. 2 Chronicles 36:22-23, Ezra 6:15. And so during Yahweh again kept his promises to Judah, but the ten tribes of Israel he did not deliver, and thereby brought to pass his word, I will no more have mercy upon the house of Israel. Hosea 1:6. Now when he had weaned Lo Ruhamah, she conceived and bare a son. Then said Yahweh, Call his name Lo-Ami, for ye are not my people, and I will not be your Elohim. Verses 8 and 9. In spite, though, of Yahweh's repeated great mercy and wonderful deliverances in her behalf, Judah's continual sins finally led her utterly to forsake him by denying his only begotten son. And they cried out all at once, saying, Away with this man, and release unto us Barabbas, Luke 23:18. Thus did Judah's backsliding at last bring upon her the dreadful antithema, You are not my people, and I will not be your Elohim, Hosea 1:9. So far in this allegory we see the history of the church up to the crucifixion of the Yahshua. Now it is necessary to ascertain whether it contains the history of the New Testament period. While in chapter 1, one of his visions, Hosea describes the church idolatrous state in the Jewish dispensation. In chapter 2, he correspondingly describes the church's idolatrous state in the Christian dispensation. Say ye unto your brethren, Ami, and to your sisters, Ruhamah, plead with your mother, plead, for she is not my wife. Neither am I her husband. Let her therefore put away her whoredoms out of her sight, and her adulteries from between her breasts, lest I strip her naked, and sit her as in the day that she was born, and make her as a wilderness, and sit her like a dry land, and slay her with thirst. And I will not have mercy upon her children, for they be the children of whoredoms, for their mother hath played the harlot. She that conceived them hath done it shamefully, for she said, I will go after my lovers, that give me my bread and my water, my wool and my flax, my oil and my drink. Hosea 2:1-5. In the Christian era, the church started out in an even more advantageous spiritual condition than in the Jewish era. Besides, she could have profited by the example of the fallen Jews. But as the verses just quoted reveal, she utterly failed to do so. Instead, as with the passing of Joshua, the Jews began to depart from their Elohim, so with the passing of the apostles, the Christians drifted likewise. In lowering the Christian standard and exalting the pagan, the church played the harlot with the heathen in this way conceiving and bringing forth her so-called convert. She hath done shamefully, saith Yahweh, for she said, I will go after my lovers that give me my bread and my water. This sentiment she reflected by her attitude that her every candidate for membership, even those not fully converted to Yeshua, should nevertheless be baptized into the regular fellowship. Meanwhile, their financial support would further the work of Yahweh. Reasoning like this is of a piece with that of the little girl who joyously exclaimed unto her mother, look, I got a good bargain from the peddler for this bag full of cherries. I was supposed to have given a pound of wool, but instead of giving all wool, I hid your gold bracelet in it. To give church membership to those who have not brought forth fruit meat for repentance is an even more costly stunt than the barter for cherries as though they were worth their weight in gold. Because this fruit's after giving away shares in the church's estate, one cannot begin to count the cost of the demoralizing influence that such subversive stockholders exert upon the true people of Yahweh. By such folly, the early church unwittingly furthered the design of the wicked seed sower and also brought upon herself the dark ages of religion. Yet even in spite of this frightful consequence, she should have taught her unforgettably the lesson to consecrate her zeal to the building up of a spirit-born membership only. She still continues heedless in her zeal for large congregations. Okay, let's continue on. It says, a passion for increase of members without a commensurate burden for their sanctification, their being born again, is engendered not by the spirit of Yeshua, but rather by the carnal heart which says, I'll go after my lovers that give me my bread and my water, my wool and my flax, my oil and my drink. Selfishness, ambition, greed, these are Satan's right-hand helpers. Had the early apostolic congregation continued in her first love for the salvation of souls and the advancement of the kingdom of Yahshua rather than for the enlarging her membership, the enemy's operatives, the terrorists, could never have infiltrated into her ranks. But her zeal for the purity waned, and she gave herself to the raising of goals, a selfish gain, yea, saith the prophet. They are greedy dogs which can never have enough, and they are shepherds that cannot understand. They all look unto their own way, every one for his gain from his quarter. Isaiah 56:11. Now what did we just learn here? Okay, we found out that the Seventh-day Adventist Church today is following exactly what is saying right here in Isaiah. She, rather than staying small and making sure that everybody was born again and sanctified in the truth, like the early Christian church, what they call the Apostolic Church of the Apostles, then they could have finally, eventually won the war, the battle, and then the war. But Adventists followed right in the footsteps of losing her purity and sanctity and allowing unborn, unconverted, to come and join her ranks. That's why she's where she's at today. Okay, how fearful the lesson. Never is the prosperity of the church to be sought in the silver and gold, and never can she stand in the wisdom and power of men. So money has its place in her economy. It is not her most urgent need. Upon fidelity to the message with which she has been entrusted depends her only real success. This calls for men whom Elohim can trust and upon whom he may freely pour his spirit. Men who will stand true to principle, though the whole world turns against them, men who will in faith rise to the heights unto which Yahshua bids. Take no thought for your life and what you shall eat or what you shall drink, nor yet for your body which you shall put on. For after all these things do the Gentiles seek. For your heavenly Father knoweth that you have need of all these things, but seek ye first the kingdom of Yahweh and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Take therefore no thought for tomorrow, for tomorrow shall take thought for the things of itself. Matthew 6:25-34. All who follow in the decadent trend of the Christian church or the early apostolic church, departing from the way of the Yeshua and going in a way which seemeth right unto a man, Proverbs 14:12, will experience the rod of Elohim's chastening. Behold, I will hedge up thy way with thorns and make a wall that she shall not find her path, and she shall follow after her lovers, but she shall not overtake them. And she shall seek them, but shall not find them. Then shall one say, I will go and return unto my first husband, for then was it better with me than now. For she did not know that I gave her corn and wine and oil, and multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal. Hosea 2:6-8. When the church drifts with the current of the world away from the Yahweh, he can no longer bless her, lest he drive her the faster downstream toward destruction. The only way that he can then save her and bring her back to him is to withdraw his helping hand from her until she finds herself grounded on a reef of her own folly. With the fierce waves of the retribution beating over her sides, then only will she respond to his voice. Yahweh's method of bringing his church to self-realization of her dangerous condition is portrayed in Yahshua's parable of the prodigal. Had the father denied the boy's request to go, the lad would forever have been embittered with the feeling of what he believed was his father's injustice, and no one could ever have convinced him that his father did not deprive him of the opportunity of winning great wealth and a name for himself. But his bitter experience along the husk path of disillusionment taught him the great lesson in his life, as nothing else could ever have taught it unto him. This parable perfectly illustrates how wisely Elohim deals with the church and her follies, and how her self-conceit and later sin wisdom prevent her profiting from the experience of others. Instead of her overtaking Christianizing her lovers, they overtook, paganized her. She shall not find them, because she has failed to save them. Finally, after going through her prodigality, she will repentantly return unto her first husband, the Yahweh. To hasten her return, the Yahweh overtakes her in the wilderness, thus fulfilling his word. Okay, then this is where we come in at. 1970. The church is returning back unto Yahshua, unto Yahweh the Father. The Adventist Church is straight away since 1844, and Yahweh started bringing her back to him in 1930 when he brought forth the rod, shepherd rod, with Vitihalef at the helm. And then he raised up Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas, that put the finishing touches on the restoration of the sanctuary, and continued to bring his church back to himself. But he intercepted her in the wilderness, and that's exactly where we were at, in the wilderness, when this took place. And this prophecy here in Hosea 2:9-11 met its fulfillment in our day. Therefore will I return and take away my corn in the time thereof, and my wine in the season thereof, and will recover my wool and my flax, given to cover her nakedness. And now will I discover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and then shall deliver her out of mine hand. I will also cause all her mirth to cease, her feast days, her new moons, and her Sabbath, and all her solemn feasts, Hosea 2:9-11. Just as Elohim chastened her in olden times by permitting Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, to abolish the ceremonial system by destroying ancient Jerusalem and his temple, just so did he chasten her in the apostolic era by permitting Rome to gain control over her and supplant her true religious system by a counterfeit, a pagan priesthood and a pagan Sabbath. Then was his word fulfilled. I will also cause all her mirth to cease, her feast days, her new moons, and her Sabbath, and all her solemn feasts. Well, this was repeated in 2002 in Kermit, Texas. Yahweh caused all of Gilead's sinners' mirth to cease. He caused all her new moons, her Sabbath to cease, her feast days, and all ceased when we split up down in Kermit, 2002-2003. Since these ordinances, her feast days, her Sabbath, etc., are part of a compacted prophecy of the gospel, a presentation in which were bound up the promises of the redemption, the Acts of the Apostles, page 14. And since Hosea's symbolization has brought us into the Christian era, the ceasing of the ordinances, therefore, typifies Rome supplanting the truth. Daniel also was shown that this was to be accomplished through Rome, the exceeding great horn which cast down to the ground the truth and the place of his Yahshua sanctuary. Daniel 8:12-11. Note that the truth and the place, not the sanctuary itself, were cast down. That is, both Yahshua's truth and his place in the earthly sanctuary were set aside so that the knowledge as to his mediatorial work became obscured. For a detailed explanation of Daniel 8:9, see the Shepherd Rod, Volume 2, pages 126-147. Track number 3, Picture and Prophets, page 27-32. And I will destroy, saith Yahweh, her vines and her fig trees, whereof she has said, these are my rewards that my lovers have given me, and I will make them a forest, and the beast of the field shall eat them, and I will visit upon her the days of Balaam, wherein she burned incense unto them. And she decked herself with her earrings and her jewels, worldly display, and she went after her lovers, the world, and forgot me, saith Yahweh. Therefore, behold, I will allure her and bring her into the wilderness, away from the vineyard, among the Gentiles, and speak comfortably unto her. This prediction was made over 1,000 years before she lost her vineyard, and before she fled into the wilderness, where she had the place prepared of Yahweh, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. Revelation 12:6. But while she was there in figurative retreat from her own land, Yahweh spake comfortably unto her. In other words, she, like the wayward prodigal, had to have a bitter experience longing again for the home before the Yahweh could do anything for her. Thus, at the end of her exile, his overtures of love and mercy were to strike in her truly responsive chord. As we have already seen, this symbolism shows a Christian church endowed with the sanctuary truth, Hosea 2:11, and since the Seventh-day Adventist church is known to be the only one with this doctrine, it is evident that this symbolical prophecy of the church history brings us this side of 1844 A.D. to the founding of the Seventh-day Adventist denomination. Consequently, the allegory now reveals her present condition and Elohim's counsel to her. Moreover, the fact that the unfolding of these chapters is now for the first time brought to the attention further proves that the lessons which they contain are expressly for the church at this hour. The first of which to be considered is the lesson of the typical valley of Achor. I will give her vineyards from thence and the valley of Achor for a door of hope, Hosea 2:15. Whatever may be the meaning of the valley of Achor, it is her door of hope. As the only way out of her predicament, to know why it is her door of hope is naturally of most immediate interest. Only three times in the scriptures is the valley of Achor mentioned. Once in a literal city, Joshua 7:24-26, and twice in a figurative city, Isaiah 65:10, Hosea 2:15. A study of the literal will give us the key that will unlock the meaning of the fugitive. Or of the figurative. The first city to fall into the hands of the Israelites upon their crossing the river Jordan was Jericho. For the command unto Joshua was that the city with every living thing in it be destroyed, burned with fire, but that all the silver and gold and vessels of brass and iron he consecrated unto the Yahweh and brought into the treasury of the Yahweh, Joshua 6:19. But the children of Israel committed a trespass and the accursed sin, and as a result they began to fall before their enemies, whereupon Joshua said, Alas, O Yahweh Elohim, wherefore hast thou at all brought this people over Jordan to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites, to destroy us? With Elohim we had been content and dwelt on the other side of Jordan. O Yahweh, what shall I say when Israel turneth their back before their enemies? For the Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land shall hear of it and shall environ us round and cut off our name from the earth. And what wilt thou do unto thy great name? And Yahweh said unto Joshua, Get thee up. Wherefore liest thou thus upon thy face? Israel hath sinned, and they have also transgressed my covenant, which I commanded them. For they have even taken the accursed thing, and have also stolen, and this symbol also, and they have put it even among their own stuff. I'll guarantee you one thing. Brother Johnson sure did steal from the Yahweh's treasury. When he did that thing with David Johnson, he stole a lifelong titty that was set aside for the gospel. I'm going to tell you, he committed the unpardonable. Therefore, the children of Israel could not stand before their enemies, but turn their backs before their enemies because they were cursed. Neither will I be with you any more, except you destroy the accursed from among you. Let's sanctify the people and say, sanctify yourself against them all, for thus saith Yahweh, Elohim of Israel. There is an accursed thing in the midst of thee, O Israel. Thou canst not stand before thine enemies until you take away the accursed thing from among you. In the morning, therefore, you shall be brought according unto your tribes, and it shall be that the tribe which the Yahweh taketh shall come according to the families and thereof, and the families which the Yahweh shall take shall come by household, and the household which Yahweh shall take shall come man by man. Joshua 7:1-7:14. And Achan was taken, and he answered Joshua and said, indeed, I have sinned against the Yahweh Elohim of Israel, and thus and thus have I done when I saw among the spoils a goodly Babylonish garment and 200 shekels of silver and a wedge of gold of 50 shekels weight, and I coveted them and took them, and behold, they are hid in the earth in the midst of my tent, and the silver under it. And Joshua and all Israel with him took Achan the son of Zerah, and the silver, and the garment, and the wedge of gold, and his sons, and his daughters, and his oxen, and his asses, and his sheep, and his tent, and all that he had. And they brought them unto the valley of Achor. And Joshua said, why hast thou troubled us? The Yahweh shall trouble thee this day, and all Israel stoned him with stones, and burned them with fire. Afterwards, they had stoned them with stones. Verses 18, 20, 21, 24, and 25. At that solemn time, Achan was the only sinner in the camp. But because of his sin, the whole nation was about to fall, and thus Yahweh's great name be dishonored in the eyes of the heathen. Yahweh's dealing with Joshua revealed that his servants must vigilantly watch that no evil enter into their ranks, and that his words through his prophets be feared, as though he himself were speaking directly unto the people. When Joshua proclaimed that there is an accursed thing in the midst of thee, O Israel, Joshua 7:13, Achan concealed his guilt as long as possible, instead of immediately confessing it. When finally it was brought to light and he was taken, he answered Joshua and said, indeed, I have sinned against Yahweh Elohim of Israel. But alas, it was too late. Then for Yahweh either to accept his confession and pardon his sin, or to vindicate his people, unless he fulfilled the obligation to deal with the sinner strictly in accordance with the manner he had prescribed. Now all these things happened unto them for ensample, and they are written for admonition upon whom the ends of the world are come. Wherefore let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. 1 Corinthians 10:11-12. For the valley of Achor of Joshua 6:7, therefore, is a type of the valley of the Achor of Hosea 2. With the key here in hand, we are now to unlock the mystery connected with the door of hope and discover what present truth lesson lies within. And typical valley of Achor, had not this remarkable judicial writ been intended for an ensample, Elohim would not have designated the very place of Achan's punishment. His execution, then, in the valley of Achor, points forward to the time of the antitypical execution within the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Hence, this antitypical valley of Achor, her door of hope, can but point to the destruction of the sinners, terrors in her midst, her illegitimate children. See Testimonies, Volume 5, page 80. Well, our new president-elect, Donald Trump, his first priority now is he's going to get rid of the illegitimate children that has come into our country illegally and uninvited and unwanted. He's going to have to destroy them one way or another, get them out, back out of this country. So, unmistakably, the type shows that during this purification, Yahweh will destroy not only every sinner among his people, but also their families and all their belongings with them. The sieve is moving, declares the Spirit of the Truth. Let us not say, stay thy hand, O Yahweh. The church must be purged, and it will be. And I saw that Yahweh was waiting his sword in heaven to cut them down. Oh, that every lukewarm profession should realize the clean work that the Elohim is about to make among his professed people. Testimony Volume 1, page 100 and 190. The type also shows that Yahweh will undertake this clean work among his professed people. Just before he entrusts them with his very last message to the world, the message of the great and dreadful day of Yahweh, Malachi 4:5. The power of this dreadful day is to lighten the earth with his glory, Revelation 18:1. And enable his people to repossess the untypical promised land, the earth, so when the worthless material is consumed, the church clad in the complete armor of the light and righteousness enters upon a final conflict, and the influence of the truth testifies unto the world of its sanctifying and ennobling character. Testimonies and Ministries, page 17 and 18. Thus, this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. Matthew 24:14. And we have entered into the beginning of the end of the world, and 2001 at the 9/11. That was a sign that we had entered into the beginning of the end of the world, that we were entering into the 12th parabolic hour, the beginning of it. And that this gospel of the kingdom will develop now, along with the developing and the restoration of the United States back to its rightful order. So will the message also be restored back to its rightful order, and is in the process of it. This brings the 21st day of this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour. Call us number 11. Click on our audio archives. Hear this message and more. We're going to close now with a song. Who at my door standing? Who at my door is standing? Patiently drawing near. Interest within demanding. Is this the voice I hear? Sweetly the clouds are falling, open the door for me. If thou wilt heed my calling, I will abide with thee. All through the dark hours dreary, knocking again is he. Joshua, thou not weary, waiting so long for me. Sweetly the tongues have fallen, open the door for me. If thou wilt heed my calling, I will abide with thee. Door of my heart I hasten, even a hope and wide. Though he rebuke and chasten, he shall with me abide. Sweetly the tongues have fallen, open the door for me. If thou wilt heed my calling, I will abide.